This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Yeah. Ben, let's go through this.
Are we recording?
Yeah, we're
the whole time.
We just chat.
Excellent.
The whole time. Okay. So let's go through this. A couple different things. Just in case if there's anybody out there that does not know you.
Yeah.
Go through it. What do you do? Who are you?
Sure.
Show is important.
My real job is I started and I'm sort of a pretty visible part of, I guess, still Magpie Human Systems. It's a consultancy. There's no shortage of us out there. I think we're a little different. It's high consequence industries, so aviation, healthcare, oil and gas, utilities, that sort of thing. And generally pretty long-term consulting, just helping folks who are already good get a little better at human-centered safety, resilience, how they learn, and how they lead.
So I have to tell you, you walk around these conferences and you have this great polo shirt that says human.
Yeah. It's just a reminder, man. I think, look, these conferences for me are fantastic, but I think we get a little maybe wrapped up in ourselves sometimes.
Todd always tells me, don't believe your own hype. Don't believe your own press.
Yeah, just sort of getting over ourselves almost. So maybe it's just tongue in cheek. I mean, it's exactly what a robot would wear, you know, to trick you. But genuinely, that's it. I think there are so many good ideas. What I worry about sometimes is, you know, people read a book or they see someone talk and they sort of get starry eyed about it. Mm. Look, man, we just work at regular old companies doing regular old work for people who are doing pure, can I swear on this?
Well, you can do whatever
pure
you want.
Pure fucking magic, right? Like the ability to go into a hospital and help people do, this is bananas to me, right? You can like take a heart out of a person and replace it. This is nuts. The fact that you can, that an airplane can take off, land, and it doesn't just end in catastrophe is magic. So if anybody should be starry-eyed, it's us, right? So right. I think it's just, it's a nod to that, maybe.
Well, I mean, I look at it, it's almost exactly how you're saying it. It's like, how did we get to where we're at in regards of what we're doing, especially because there's people out there doing this work that's, it's magical. It's almost like magic.
Amazing.
And it's, are we allowed to talk about what you were telling about at the hospital?
Yeah.
So, I mean, a few nights ago, you were telling me a story about how you went to a hospital, you were observing a doctor. Yes. And as you just mentioned, this reconstruction about this, about a child's heart, an infant's heart.
Yes.
I mean, and it's just amazing that you have an opportunity like that based on the work that you do.
Based on curiosity, right? And I think, the world doesn't need to know, but we were out doing karaoke.
And they don't need to hear it.
And some of us sing better than others.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's not us. And I think we're all curious, and some of us are maybe doing a little better than others, but we can all get better at it. And I think one of the ways to get better at it is just when things feel scary, go in. Right. And so, I literally stayed up nights thinking, am I going to pass out? Is it going to bring up a lot of memories of my own kids being in the hospital? What's going to happen? And I just had to say, finally, like we're doing it. Mm-hmm. And they were fascinated by the way that anybody asked. And I think I'm just too stupid not to, to say, hey, can I come in and stand next to you while you do an operation? Absolutely bonkers to me. And to be in an industry that can go do those sorts of things and help in our own little way, I don't know what I'd do if I had to find a different job.
You know, it's like the work that you do is so important. And I'm just giving it from my perspective. I look at the stuff that you're able to do out there, the things that you talk about, and I look at it and I go, it's amazing what you get to see, but it's all because of what the workers are doing out there.
At 100%. We're not the ones doing the, you know, and I think that's it, right? Very important conference. And by the way, crazy well organized. Energy Safety Can is incredible. Man, I don't have enough good things to say about it.
I'll tell you, I'll put it to you this way. I get to go to so many different conferences. I'm always amazed when I get to come out to this one. I was like, this is number three for me. And I'm always going like, how did I get invited back? That's the first question.
Clerical error.
It's like, same. Maybe I'm just on the same report year over year, but the venue and the way that this is arranged. And I know that Amy Krueger does not like me saying her name on the air, but she really does like, or she does have this so put together in regards of what's going on.
And here's the, so look, if you're listening to this and you have a much bigger audience than Punk Rock Safety.
Oh, not true.
We have 9 listeners we've established.
Okay. I might have 10 then.
But
okay.
If you're listening to this and there's a lot more folks and you're on the fence and you're thinking about it, here's what I think is unique about this one. There are brilliant speakers. Not all of them. Sometimes they let folks like me in. There are brilliant speakers. There are, that's a highlight, right? But then there are hundreds of people in the room doing that magic work. It is not an echo chamber. It is people who, like in this last session, said, I don't have time to do the work I'm being asked to do. And now you're telling me to take a walk for an hour a day and think about the future. And I think that's, it's so good, right? To be kept honest. And I think the mix that, and they're very purposeful.
Right.
You know, I think Amy has said that, right? It's a very purposeful sort of conference in that way. And it's the best way to do it.
Well, I look at it and it's like they're ahead of the curve. They start leaning of, you need to take a look at this. You might have not looked this way. Maybe you're looking the opposite direction. Take a look at what's going on. This year, there's been a lot of focus about artificial intelligence, which I think is a great conversation because it's not a normal conversation in safety.
And maybe specifically not in this sector.
Right.
And maybe specifically not for frontline folks in this sector, right? If you're a new mucker, right? Like you're cruising, right? You're not thinking ChatGPT isn't doing what you're doing, right? Maybe, you know, the folks that are, you know, doing a lot of data wrangling, you know, with downhole data, fine. But I think for the folks here, and there's a lot of them that deal with safety, it's easy to forget. And again, I think we have to stay away from self-importance, right? It's easy to forget there is a lot of what we do that can be helped by a large language model, by something like, for a lot of folks, it's Gemini if you're on the Google platforms or ChatGPT. But to put something in and say, hey, look, I've got all this data. I need your help. Like, how do I make sense of it? What are some emerging themes? Are there questions you think I should ask other people? And that saves days of thinking. And now I can go out and do it and make a difference. The boys from learning teams have been out here, right? Great questions. They're big advocates of a really cool piece of hardware that records conversations. If you and I had to go through 100 hours of recorded conversation, imagine what we'd miss. And to Brent Sutton's point, I'll give Brent a good shout out. Brent is incredible on this sort of thing. I think certainly way ahead of me, but Brent and I were talking about this idea of the bias that we take, that unconscious bias that we take into those questions and interpretation of the answers, that I can use a little bit of AI to say, hey, dude, hey, computer. What do you think? Here's what I think. What do you think? And to do that in 5 seconds, unreal. And what it does is then it unshackles safety people from the truck or the office or the airplane flying back and forth, and means that I can be on site talking to people about shit that matters. That to me is, you know, we listened to this really great couple of presentations on AI. I think the near-term benefit is that for me. Go do cool human stuff.
Well, and it's interesting just talking about some of the stuff that Brent and Jeff were able to bring up during their presentation. When you put in that, how do they call it? It's not Cobot. What do they call it? Hop. I forgot now the name of the product, but it was Hop Copilot or maybe something along those lines. But it was just amazing just to be able to hear is you don't have to have a trained facilitator to do learning teams.
Right.
Because now this large language model is able to adjust some of the information that's there. The other portion was that I like that he mentioned that you can challenge it.
Yes.
So that he gave you, here's two examples.
Yep.
Put it inside of the system and ask it, how many of these errors do you see? Which ones are correct? Which ones are not correct? I thought it was genius.
It is, admittedly, Magpie is not like on the leading edge of this, right? We are very, very much dirty hands kind of folks in a lot of ways, right? Where we do use it is we do a lot of frontline interviews. Frontline maybe isn't the right word, but so sort of point of work. So we're just talking to people, we're recording data. We get 100, 200 hours of interviews. Now what? Right. And so we have some really cool tools that we've built, proprietary stuff. We go through, we do analysis, we make this big honking report, and that's cool. But I don't always have time to go back to the report. And so what we do then too is we have a trained model on that interview data. On all the data we've collected. And now you give a plant manager or a supervisor a tool where you say, hey, man, like I'm now a leader in this team. It's a new team to me. Can you talk to me about what they've said about trust in the last year? And it'll come back, and they're not all batting 1,000, right? Like not every answer is amazing, but most of them are pretty damn good. And it says something like, hey, in the past, what people talk about is they really feel like their leaders are engaged. What they don't really feel is like there's great follow through. And what they're saying they would like to change is just to have some really small things that they can identify that follow through on. And they want to have their opinion in designing the change. You get an answer like that and you go, okay, well, it's not earth shattering, but it's nice to maybe that's validation. I don't know.
I mean, it's just amazing, just the approach that when I get to hear other people talk about the stuff that they're doing, and it's new teams, it's frontline workers. And I know you said that not to use it exactly in that term, but it's just amazing, just the work that's out there that's going on. And it's nothing that quote unquote we're doing. It's the people that are out there doing all the stuff. Now I have a question for you. So you were here. Unfortunately, we were not able to record your presentation. Can you give people the title of your presentation?
I'm not sure that it's unfortunate.
Title of the presentation and how did you come up with it? Maybe that should be the two things. And I'm talking about the presentation you did yesterday, not the workshop.
Yeah. I hopped. Mm-hmm. Now what? Look, I'm a pretty simple mind, Jay. I try to listen intently to the people who struggle getting their head around this. And there is, you look at Todd Conklin's work, right? It's brilliant. It's brilliant. And for folks doing work, very often they come to a conference like this and they're on it, man. They're excited. They see some of the folks who've been here, they read some of the books and they go back. And there's not a lot of room to argue. The thing that I said yesterday, right, is you're looking at these five principles that are literally brilliant, right? Not just in their simplicity, but it makes sense. But there's really not room to disagree, right? If you disagree, you're an asshole. That's pretty clear.
Right.
You just go, no, I hate learning. That's sort of silly. And so that's the question people ask a lot of times is, right, I get it. My leaders are looking at it and they're saying, yeah, we learn. What do you want from me? So it's that answering of now what? And I think what's frustrating for folks, and it's not all this simple, but what gets frustrating is when we talk about, and I'll just call it old school view of safety. The way I started in safety, there was certainty. We almost sought certainty and we called that kind of the end, right? So does this little number, which we know today is not that great, does this little number go down? If yes, great job. There's certainty, whether manufactured or not. A lot of the answers in this thing we call HOP are, well, the system is complex, and so it depends. There is no leader in the world who doesn't seek a little bit more certainty, and that is friction. That friction between people who are looking, great safety people who are going, it's a weird system, dude, and it kind of depends. And leaders going, I have to talk to the board. What do you want me to say to them? You know, I don't get to do financials and send it out to the shareholders and just go, just shrug and go, I don't know, dude. I mean, sort of depends. Although this year, I think companies are sort of doing that more. So that's what we talked about. We just said, you know, in a few hundred folks that have tried to do this work, what do they want you to know about how to break through some of those speed bumps? That's what it was. In an hour, we solved all of it.
So you solved all the problems when it was all said and done. But sure. It's a different approach because this is not normal conversations that people are having out there. So how did you come up with this idea? Let me ask you, that's going to be kind of a double. How'd you come up with the idea? And when you presented this to Energy Safety Canada, did they have to approve the theme?
Did they have to approve the
thing? Right. I don't know how some of these presentations come through. And I'm just asking the question because you have very creative titles. We're not even going to get in. We haven't even gotten into the punk rock safety creative.
They're not. Look,
should we talk about the shirt you have on right now?
We can talk about Neanderthal DNA. We can talk about the shirt.
So is the Neanderthal DNA thing really true?
I showed the screen.
I know you showed a screen thing, but you know, everything could be manipulated.
No, I'm not smart enough for that. It is genuinely true.
So explain this to people that are listening.
My family thinks it's amazing and they already knew, you know? So several years ago, and I shared this in my session and I said, you shouldn't listen to me, which I think a lot of people know intuitively, right? And I just said, look, there's a bunch of people at a conference. The difference between me and you is I have a clicker and a microphone. That's it. That's it. I am not the, have been bestowed with all the magical knowledge. I have a really cool position to maybe learn more and quickly because just of the work that I do. But I said, you shouldn't listen to me. And here's why. A few years ago, I did the 23andMe thing. I think this is pretty popular. A lot of people have done it. It comes back, shockingly, not a lot of revelations about my background. But there's this there's a page on there that says Neanderthal ancestry. And I thought, well, that's cool. The one thing that was that stood out is it said you have more Neanderthal DNA than 99% of the people who have used 23andMe. And as I shared yesterday, as a simple caveman, math is probably not my strong suit. That means if there's 100 of us in a room, I win, right? Like I'm just over here painting on walls. And I just, like, to me, right, it's funny. It's funny to me that's my thing, right? I just happened into it. But I think we have to get over ourselves, man. Like we just have to stay grounded and to look at those five principles and say they're important and they're wonderful and we can agree with all of them. They are first principles. They are first principles in the same way as I shared yesterday that gravity is a first principle, right? Like the existence of gravity is important, but it's not an answer to anything. It is an underlying theory that spans everything that we do, but I don't get to walk into a boardroom, shout gravity, and turn away.
Well, you could. Just to see what happens.
I would be successful with another organization or be asked to be. And so that's sort of what we talked about, right? Is that now what I don't think you mentioned, look, that's not kind of the conversations that we're having in a lot of places. That's the conversation at work. People don't look at it and disagree fundamentally that error is normal. Where they struggle, and this is not my revelation, right? This is just shutting up and listening to people out doing work. Where they struggle is saying, what do you want me to do with that? Like I could have told you. What do you want me to do with it? And then the kind of strange binaries that come with it, we talked about yesterday as well, which is wonderful sentiment to say people are the solution, they're not the problem, right? Or people create solutions, they're not the problem. Great sentiment. Pretty weird to throw at a leader, because sometimes it, and I told the story of me trying to run over triple expanding foam with a forklift. I told a story of a guy literally knocking another man out at a job site because he ate the piece of pizza he wanted, right? Sometimes, like, it feels very deeply like someone is the problem, right? So it's giving leaders room, and I think really everyone, but especially leaders, room to question those things and not feel dumb and not feel like an asshole. Because it's easy to just go, well, you can't, if it's good, and the people, the speakers all said it was good and we should do it. And I think it's okay to sit back and go, I don't know, man, this seems weird. Like, we should think about how it translates.
Yeah, you shouldn't definitely question anything that the speakers are saying, regardless of who the speaker is.
And especially if they're a Neanderthal.
Well, that brings up the next question. So is the next presentation a Neanderthal's way of doing hop? Is that the title?
I gotta say, I think every presentation I do, that's built in, right? We already know. No, man, it was a lot of fun.
No, the crowd was very engaged in regards to what you had going on. So, and I'm not saying that because you're sitting in front of me.
Well, they were very kind. I'd warmed a few of them up in a workshop earlier in the week. Also a lot of fun. Look, you asked about, does it have to be approved, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm always curious about the titling.
It does. I mean, it's not my conference, right? And part of my job, at least as I see it, is, well, all of my job is to help make this successful. And that means they have to be able to market it. There has to be something useful. But when we had that conversation early, it was sort of about, I said, look, a thing I'm hearing from a lot of folks at work is, love it, agree with it, keep going to conferences and learning. I'm just struggling, man, with some of this stuff. And I, maybe tongue in cheek, just said, well, what about, like, I hopped, now what? And to their credit, they were open to a pretty goofy title.
I like it.
You know, I don't know.
I think that's so important, because sometimes we get so corporate, if anything, with certain things where it's like you can't approach it that way, which brings into my next question, of course, punk rock safety.
Yeah.
How did this even come about? Because the merging of those two worlds together, especially when you hear that as a title, how did this?
Yeah.
And let's go backstory. And you told me a tidbit of the backstory, but I want really for the people that might have not heard the show,
yep,
for them to know exactly how it came about.
So,
and we can talk very disrespectfully about your co-host too, at the same time.
I've been doing safety stuff for a while, and you know, at one point, man, you just feel like you're in it, right? You're stuck in it. I didn't feel like we weren't making the progress we were trying to convince ourselves we were making. It was very old school. It was very, embarrassingly blame-oriented, right? It's investigative. It's after the fact. And you go, man, this is not, felt like a boy band, right? Like, it's just manufactured, pumping it out there. Everybody was doing it. And, you know, I grew up listening to punk, and punk is very much DIY. It is sometimes kind of experimental. Sometimes it pushes the edges of what people are comfortable with. It is very, very much, despite what it can seem like from the outside, a family, right? You go to a punk show and it's loud and it looks messy. Man, people are taking great care of each other. And to me, that way of thinking just, it felt like safety was getting either punitive or academic, and there was really nothing in between, you know. And for punk, right, that's, you're fighting the man, you know. It's like, it's like the, you know, you're sort of anti-authority is the sense. I'm not saying that everything is bad, right? We wouldn't have made it this far in life if everything we'd done with safety was awful. It isn't. But it felt like a cool way to express some of that. And here, wildly to me, there's a shit ton of punk bands with PhDs in them.
Well, you know that that was going to be my next question. It was crazy. Like, how are you anti against the band, and then all three of you have PhDs?
Well, look, man, Bad Religion, PhD, right? Look at Milo from the Descendants. I don't know if he got a PhD yet, but awfully close, right? And this happens all the time. And I think, look, I don't know what people think a PhD does.
Some people think it's a superpower.
Some of us are slow learners and we just have to keep going to school until we catch on. I think Ron and I have had this discussion a lot, and probably Dave and I too, but somebody's got to use that shit for powers of good, you know, and like it or not, sometimes it opens a door that wouldn't otherwise be open. And if you can crack that door open and start getting a message through that makes a little sense, you know, you watch Henry Rollins, man, has some just awesome interview, really smart dude. Not a politician, but holy smokes, makes a lot more sense than most of them, right? And it just comes back to that pragmatism that punk is about. It's like if it isn't working, we don't do it. And I think that safety needs that, man. We just try to force shit on people and go, if we just do more of it, if we pump out the next New Kids on the Block, it'll do it, right? And sometimes you just have to rattle it. And that's what I was thinking, you know, and I bought the stupid domain a million years ago and didn't do anything. I wrote like a landing page for a blog. Ron, Dave and I were kind of sitting around like you and I are here, just shooting the shit, talking about stuff, being smart asses about safety. And somebody said, you should record this. Now, this was in a bar, I should point out, and a lot of bad ideas emerged from bar conversations. So anyway, it is an extended bad idea to 31 episodes, I think, now. And it's silly. We're having fun and you know, maybe it helps people sometimes. Maybe it's at least something to laugh at.
Well, I mean, you definitely have a cult following because you have a following online. And if you if you ever want to test the waters, just say one thing about anyone else and you'll see on how the repeaters come out automatically. Sure. So it's a very interesting approach. Now, I remember when somebody first told me about your show, they said it's just an excuse for a whole bunch of PhDs to get together and say the F word. That's what how it was said to me.
Yeah. No, that's, look. I think most of us don't talk like we do on LinkedIn.
Right.
Like in my real life, I've never said, I'm thrilled to announce. Mm-hmm. Right. What? We don't talk that way. I'm going to lean on, as my daughter told me, there's some research that says the more you swear, the higher chances are that you're honest. Right. I like to think it.
Right? All my brother-in-laws are sailors, so they're very honest.
You know, it's... And it doesn't mean you have to be an asshole, right? It just has to mean that you have some sense that you're going to be truthful, that you're going to be curious about things. And I'm not saying those that you can't say whatever, fuck. And you're not, you know, you don't have to say that to be smart or curious or whatever. But we talk that way too. It's just three good friends, mm-hmm. You know. Giving each other shit, you know, often picking on one another, talking about some of these ideas. I am frequently picked on for having done quite a bit of audits in my life. I was on an audit standards board, man. You should pick on me for that shit. you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. It just comes back to, I think, just, you know, the ability to say, dude, that's fucking stupid. And be okay and move on. And think that sometimes we've done stuff that in hindsight is funny. It's funny how we thought it would work.
It was interesting because I want to say it was a couple of weeks ago at this point, you had Sam Goodman on from the Hop Nerd.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
A couple months ago, probably. Was it a couple
time,
months?
Time flies.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Why does it seem like it was so much shorter than that? Well, maybe you recorded it a couple of months ago. Yeah, sure. Slow drag there in regards of letting it out. But just part, like some of that, some of that episode, the way that you guys tie your conversations together and interacting with people.
Yeah.
It's almost like somebody put a microphone inside of a room and just a group of people just talking.
And that was the intent, right? And maybe it doesn't, you know, there is literally no preparation. There are times we hit record and then just say, what do you think we should do? I mean, it's three guys that are, well, some of us busier than others. I'm mostly sitting around here just dreaming up things to do, but, you know, traveling all over. Ron's got a real job, as we know.
A real job.
So, you know, it's tough, right? Trying to get everybody together. It's tough. You know, other people have it a lot tougher than we do, right? But you get on, and the intent is just an honest, kind of off-the-cuff. People don't need to be preached to. There's a lot of...
There's podcasts out there for that.
There's plenty. And they have a place, right? Absolutely have a place. And there's some really fun, very academic podcasts. And it's a place and time thing, right? You know, sometimes I want to drive and just knock out 4 hours of really cool academic discussion. Our podcast is dumb.
Well, no, the way that I always tell people...
It's approachable. Maybe that's the
Maybe that's the right way of saying it, because I always tell people there's a market for everything. And there's a way to look at this. And
even our podcast.
No, because it's... People want to have normal conversations. They don't want the perfection. They don't want the, oh, this needs to be perfect. Oh, there's a gasp that this came through. Let me make sure that that's cut out. And you guys have hit the button, start recording, just like you said. And it's an honest and genuine conversation. Yeah. It's
this good or bad.
Well, I mean, it's like how you're feeling at the moment. Yeah. That's how people react.
It's funny sometimes to go back and listen to them and you go, oh boy. To your point, right? It's an in the moment thing. It's the product of, it's like all of us, right? You go to work and you have a shit day, man. The conversation is different. Right. And sometimes that comes out, right? We've been out doing stuff and you're just questioning, right? Some of the work. And I think, I don't know. I haven't felt anybody who has not had a shit day at work, who hasn't been frustrated with the work. I think punk is approachable, if nothing else, or mostly approachable. And that's, gosh, if we stop doing that, you know, I think we'll retire.
So, you know, I had to ask the question automatically.
Yeah.
You referenced punk several times. Who's your favorite band?
Oh, dude.
Who's your favorite punk band? And it's not, and you can't give me this multiple.
One. Easy answer. No effects. People pick on them. It's skate punk. It's silly. It's not real, but whatever. That's it for me. NOFX. I love it. There are a lot of bands that I love. I was at NOFX's. We had a field trip for the.
Yeah. I actually know a couple people that approached you guys while we were out there. So
yeah, 3 days of NOFX's last three shows, a whole bunch of bands. Pennywise was there. The Vandals. I love, freaking love the Vandals, man. Descendants. Great, cool bands that we grew up. Lagwagon, come on, man. This is great stuff. But NOFX. All day, every day, I could listen to it. You stick me on a desert island, I'd be good.
It's my go-to is the Misfits. I went to one. Yeah, I went to the Misfits reunion show that came to Tampa.
Glenn's a little weird, man. He's a little weird. It's very sad.
I like him though.
I could see.
I like him.
It's all right.
I'm quite obsessed with that man's body of work in regards to the stuff that he's done.
Look, and I think here's the other thing about that there should be about punk. I think, you know, there are people always that come up with something, but it's very much inclusive, right? It is rare that you run into people that are like, oh, name your 10 favorites. Mm-hmm. Just like, dude, if you're into it and you want to go thrash around in a mosh pit and have fun, do it. There's a lot of different, Agnostic Front sounds a little different, right, than Misfits, or sounds definitely different than Vandals or something like that. So there's room for a lot of it.
So let me kind of jump back to something that I was asking earlier and then I forgot to go back to, or I start. Now we're going to use the whole thing. What drove you to get your PhD? And I know that you said lifetime learners, some people take longer to learn, but why did you decide to go down this path? And should I ask what your dissertation was about?
You can, I'll give you the shortest version. that I can. I think it was cool. I think most people have been through that process too. I was an absolute moron, in my honor. And I think a lot of people go to their undergrad and they're probably not mentally ready. And I was not. Like, I was half-baked prefrontal cortex, shouldn't have been in it. And struggled, man, struggled to kind of figure it out. And I had a chance then to kind of redeem myself a little bit. I ended up being able to go do a safety science degree or a master's degree. Pretty cool, right? And I still fucked it up, right? Like, there were parts of it that I did well. I was working full time. I just not good at managing time. And I didn't feel like I got out of it what I should have. It's my fault, right? It wasn't the program. I had a really cool physics teacher in high school, Sohail Khan. Incredible dude who, despite picking on me a lot, and he should have, and occasionally zapping me with a Tesla coil, and he should have, pushed that sort of stuff. Like, dude, you owe it to yourself to go do this, to get out and learn and do cool shit. And it, man, it stuck with me. I think he was a cool cat. And I didn't get in the first time. I was accepted on academic probation. Well, when you do a shit job as an undergrad, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And maybe less fantastic as a grad student, people worry about you. But it went great. I think I felt like I'd found that space to just be experimental. It was, you get latitude, you know, people say, well, what are you interested in doing? I mean, here's some coursework, and I could have a conversation and say, I don't think that I want to do that exactly. Here's some problems I'm seeing in the industry, and I'd like to think about that, and I'd like to publish on it. I think it would be cool. And folks just say, okay. I don't know, man. To me, that felt cool. It was bonkers. I was working full time. The day I started, my son was 10 days old. It was a series of terrible life choices. It was some of the most stress and the most fun I've ever had. Just really, really cool. You know, I don't get to publish like Proven does all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, he likes to remind us of that, but it's stuff is fun. I don't know. It's fun kind of peeling back layers.
So what was the dissertation on?
Yeah. I'm involved in the Resilience Engineering Association, and I am not a resilience engineer. I come around to resilience sort of the slow way. And the way I think for me, it was computational, right? So I was really interested in solving a problem I had been asked to look at, which was transportation related. So in the United States, there's a thing called runway incursions. That's when two things are on a runway at the same time, and they ought not be. And you don't want them to be, right? You'd like your airplane to be the only thing. And for 20 some years, the government had spent increasingly more money and that problem had gotten worse. And so they were kind of curious, like, hey man, there's something we could do. Like, where should we, it's not unlimited money. What should we do? And I tried a couple things, they didn't work. And I kind of settled on Bayesian belief networks as a way to approach that. It was sort of a way of reasoning statistically that is a lot, you know, most of us aren't doing experimental probability math in our daily life, right? We're sort of updating what we learn as we go. And so Bayesian work will do that. It's a network model. It's continuous. It's non-parametric, just like life. There's randomness to it. It's crazy. But the cool thing is, like, we humans love counterfactual reasoning. Like, ooh, what if this had happened instead? It does that natively. And that's really powerful when you're trying to say to people in places like Congress, here's where we think we should spend money. And they say, yeah, but what if this? And you can actually model it. It's not perfect, but it's better than a wild ass guess. So that was it.
Very nice.
Very cool.
So when you say that slow learner took you a while,
yeah.
How many years to get the PhD?
For the PhD.
Did you go the long path?
No, man. I went full tilt boogie. That was my agreement with my wife. So I didn't accept the letter. I handed it to her. I mean, we had just had a kid.
And did you get punched in the face first?
No. Coolest person I know, genuinely. And she said, I'm in, but you're going to go as fast as you can go. So fast as I could go was 3.5 years. I worked on it every day for 3.5 years. It was, I don't recommend it, but that was the deal.
So I've had other PhDs on and they have said this to me and I wanted, would love to get your opinion on it. You have to be ego driven to get one. Would you agree with that comment?
No.
Why not?
There is no one less impressed with me than me. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's not a good thing. I think a lot of it is just motivated for me by this feeling that I don't know enough. And I got to figure this shit out, right? Like, and it was an excuse, genuinely an excuse. I was at work all day, every day, trying to run this operation. And it was an excuse to think about thinking and have that kind of forced on you. Unreal, right? It doesn't happen for most of us. So, I don't. There are people that say, look, the only reason to do it is there's a commercial purpose to it. That has never happened for me. The size of problem you need to apply the kind of tool that I developed doesn't come across. It doesn't happen very often. So it's certainly not commercial. It was just neat, man. I'm a simple caveman. I think everybody has kind of their own motivation for it. And I don't know that that's a binary answer. Mm-hmm. For me, it didn't feel
okay.
I am embarrassed when somebody says doctor or PhD. Mm-hmm. It's not that I didn't work for it. I worked incredibly hard. I just think it kind of, I don't know, man. It's not representative of a person, right? It's a time in life.
Well, I mean, I always like to ask that question because what I always think that happens is that people have the assumption automatically that you have all the answers because of those letters.
Yeah, that's unsafe.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah. I mean, what do you think? Is it ego? You've asked a lot of people, you have experience. Is it?
I think to some extent, I would say, in my case, I would say yes, because my sister had a master's degree in IO psychology.
Oh, and, that's a cool field.
And I was like, well, shit, I need to get one in IO psychology. But if she has a master's, I'm going to get a PhD.
Doubling down.
So I doubled down. And then once I actually was done, I came to the realization that, well, I think the master's degree pays a lot better than what the PhD does because everybody thinks you're a researcher now or you want to be some kind of lab assistant.
And it's a good point, right? I'm not academic enough for an academic. Mm-hmm. Right. And they'll help happily tell me that. And I'm not operational enough for operations people because once it's there, they go, oh, this guy, look at this guy. He's wearing bow ties and doing research. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's a weird line to walk, but again, it is, if applied curiosity is your thing, you're in it, man. Like that is the job. Getting a PhD.
Yeah, I mean, my whole thing was I wanted to really understand how humans work.
It is. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that was the whole thing. I remember there was an older movie I watched many, many years ago that was called The General's Daughter. And the lady, one of the main character says that she works in PsyOps. And John Travolta's character says, what do you do there? We learn how to fuck with people's minds. Perfect. That was her answer. And I was like,
like an IO psych.
And I was like, that's not exactly what I want to do, but it's something that I'm interested in to understand it.
Yeah. Super cool. So, yeah. That's what we've been doing for a few days here. Right? Just manipulating others at a conference.
Well, I think Sean Brady said it the best in regards of the dark psychology side in regards of setting up some of those words. So if people want to find out more about what you're doing, where can they find out more information?
Magpie is pretty easy to find. Safetyforhumans.com. That's an on-purpose domain, right? That's what we do. Punkrocksafety.com, that's another one. Or come hang out at a conference, man. I mean, that's kind of the, I think, the neatest way to do it, because we have a chance to get to know each other. We get to have pretty honest conversations, just like you and I are right here. This is, we just happen to have a microphone, but, right. You know, I mean, the coolest things that happen are in the hallways here. And when you're in a place like this, it's hard not to to want to hang out.
It's beautiful here.
But there's so many good ones, and you'll be at a few conferences that are coming up too. So just follow Jay around. You'll know they're good places.
Well, let's not say it that way. But
no, look, that's it. You hop on the website, drop me a line. I'll answer, you know, any email. You can call me anytime you want. Love it, man. This stuff's cool.
Well, Ben, I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Ben.
The views and opinions expressed during this broadcast, podcast, or radio show are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Safety FM and or Radio Big. The content discussed, including examples of analysis, is provided for illustrative purposes only. It should not be applied as the sole solution in real-world scenarios, as it is based on limited and dated open source information. Any assumptions made during this broadcast, podcast, or radio show are not reflective of Safety FM and or Radio Big. No portion of this broadcast, podcast, or radio show may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, electronic, mechanical, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of Safety FM and or Radio Big. For permission requests, please contact Safety FM or Radio Big directly.